Today I want to spend a few moments talking with you about a project that was initiated a few years ago, a concerted effort to start protecting the global cotton genetic resources. And before I begin, I want to acknowledge the long laundry list of co-authors on this talk. This is a true internationally collaborative effort that I'm going to describe today. It involves scientists and curators from 8 different countries around the world. So in the cotton research community, we have an organization that's called the International Cotton Genome Initiative. And this is an organization that was formed in early 2000s with really two primary objectives. One objective being to stimulate communication and collaborative work amongst international scientists, and the second objective being to translate genomic research advances into practical breeding and cultivar development solutions. And in terms of the International Cotton Genome Initiative, or ICGI, the structure of this organization is divided into work groups. Germplasm and genetic stocks being one work group that I'm going to talk about today. And the ICGI, we have a biannual research conference that's held at a different location. And what I'm going to talk about today came out of discussions at the ICGI meeting in Anyang, China in 2008. So in terms of the germplasm and genetics stocks work group, the framework really in this work group is to communicate the importance of cotton genetic resources and to facilitate international germplasm collaborations. And this is a really important point for cotton, because although cotton is a major economic commodity worldwide, there are no concerted global efforts to preserve and conserve the cotton genetic resources similar to the CG centers, one of which we heard from earlier today. So with this point that I bring up, it's really important for the research community in cotton to get together with one another collaboratively to make sure that we maintain our genetic resources for a long time to come. So out of discussions in China in 2008, our work group decided, based on our known importance of these genetic resources, we wanted to develop a global germplasm white paper, you might say, that involved global participation amongst known collections and curators. So our strategies in this project were threefold. One, identify major germplasm collections and their curators. Two, to develop a survey to gather information. And three, to compile and summarize the information into a peer-reviewed journal document. What our main objective here was to provide a one-stop shop, you might say, for anyone that's in the research community that's interested in what's available in terms of the global cotton genetic resources. So the major cotton germplasm collections that we targeted for this report that are under preservation were in 8 different countries: Australia, Brazil, China, France via CROD, India, Russia, United States, and Uzbekistan. Although these are 8 collections, of course, there are other collections across the world that we weren't able to communicate with effectively to include in this report. So in looking at what's available in terms of cotton germplasm resources, it's known to date that there are about 50 species of Gossypium that have been characterized. And this summary slide just kind of shows a summary of the accessions that are the species that we know about in Gossypium in terms of the gene pool methodology. So we have the primary, secondary, and tertiary gene pools. And of course, in the primary gene pool, this represents 5 tetraploid species of cotton. In terms of cultivation worldwide, two of the five tetraploid species represent the most cultivation across the world. There are also three other tetraploid species that are not cultivated on a widespread basis. And outside of the tetraploids, there are about 45 or so diploid species that fall into the secondary and tertiary gene pool. And you can see the geographic locations that are represented by these particular species. So in this report, one of the first things we wanted to do was summarize the information in what we considered a useful manner. So this table shows a summary of the cultivated tetraploid species that are available across these eight world collections. And so we focused on Gossypium hirsutum and Gossypium barbadense here, going across collections as well as different types of accessions that are in the collections, including germplasm, cultivars, genetic stocks, etc. And of course, we had an exhaustive table. It's not my intention for you to read everything on this table, but we did provide this in our document. And this just goes through listing the other species outside of the two primary cultivated species and how many accessions across these different collections are available. So another part of the paper that we developed, we wanted to address some of the concerns or the things that a curator might be interested in their particular collection. So we wanted to identify some trends coming out of the description of storage and conservation methods that each collection used. Most collections use both short-term and long-term storage of seed. Most collections also use systematic percentage seed increases on an annual basis to renew seed stocks. Garden nurseries are used to maintain wild species in India and China, and greenhouses are used to maintain other difficult species. And this is another key point I want to bring up, because a lot of the wild Gossypium species are very photoperiodic, and it really takes some skill to get these different accessions to actually flower and then produce viable seed. So greenhouses and garden nurseries are used for these purposes. In Uzbekistan, although this collection out of the eight that we surveyed has the largest amount of accessions, it has they have no cool or cold storage facilities available. So that is certainly a concern when thinking about the long-term viability of that collection. In Brazil, they only have the resources to implement long-term storage for their collection. Some highlights out of germplasm availability. Of course, in the U.S., all germplasm in the USDA collection is freely available to anyone with a legitimate request. Other germplasm collections require material transfer agreements, even within country, for individual scientists in that country to request germplasm from that country's collection. And when you go to trying to acquire germplasm across country boundaries, let's just say there are complex acquisition processes involved, and they really differ depending on what country you're interested in obtaining germplasm from. So the last part of the talk, I want to spend most of my time talking about future concerns and needs that were brought up through dialogue with these eight countries. And these are really summarized into four main points: exploration and exchange, conservation and regeneration, characterization and data collection, and data storage and accessibility. So in terms of exploration and exchange, some of the major challenges that were highlighted, of course, loss of native habitats and populations. This is a real critical area of concern. International treaties, national MTAs, and political and legal constraints that are involved. And just like other areas of research, funding is certainly a concern. Funding, especially for future germplasm explorations. And I wanted to show a slide that really gets to the point and highlights how critical this issue is, because our report uncovered there are at least 17 known species that are at risk for extinction. Four of these species listed at the top of the slide here, although they've been characterized, there are actually no accessions that are maintained in any of these eight collections. And there's another 13 at the bottom of the slide here that have five or fewer accessions across collections. So this is a real area of concern. These fall into the secondary and tertiary gene pools. So with present genetic tools, they're not, the genes in these materials are not very accessible, but I feel certain that that's changing in the future. So with challenges, there are always opportunities. And in the exploration and exchange area, our report said that there are opportunities for collaborative multinational explorations, which may help to resolve the issues related to political and legal constraints involved, and also opportunities for increased collection-to-collection exchange, which has been ongoing amongst some of these collections over the years. But, of course, more exchange would be beneficial to everyone involved. In terms of conservation and regeneration, some of the challenges noted in the report: rising energy and maintenance costs, of course, infrastructure development costs, particularly if you think about the Uzbekistan collection where they don't have proper environmental conditions to maintain their collection, and also problems associated with tropical nurseries. Tropical nurseries, we don't have very good control over environmental conditions, and a hurricane or some other type of storm can really devastate materials that are present in these nurseries. But some opportunities that were brought up in the report: there's an opportunity for collaborative resource and regeneration efforts, kind of pooling resources across countries, if that's even doable, I don't know. But also an opportunity for planned critical germplasm redundancy across collections. And I think this is something that could really be beneficial to all of the eight collections that we've identified, kind of a backup to the backups that are already present in each collection. In terms of characterization and data collection, the challenges, just like many other crops, uniform data collection across collections is a big challenge. Also, agronomic and improvement data. If you ask most breeders what information they'd like to get their hands on before they go to the germplasm collections, is they want agronomic and improvement data. And in this regard, germplasm redundancy is a major issue, because data collection and evaluation is not cheap. And if there are redundancies in the collection, this just increases cost. But opportunities in this regard: establishment of uniform data guidelines. I believe this is already underway. Not as a result of this report, but this is something that USDA and a few of the other collections have already begun discussing. Also, establishing core collections and core sets of DNA markers. We saw a talk earlier in the session about the value of core collections, and this is something that we hope to get going in the next year or so as a spinoff of this collaboration. Also, opportunities for collaborative multinational field trials. This would provide an abundance of really useful data to users of germplasm. Data storage and accessibility. Challenges, just developing and maintaining databases. What data do we need to maintain is one of the questions that came out. Opportunities, though, exist for database linkages and establishing uniform databases through multinational collaboration. So with that, I want to end my talk and again highlight, you probably heard me say collaborative and communication several times in this report, and I think this is what really hits home to me after this project has been completed, is how important these two areas are, especially for a crop like cotton that is not maintained by an international gene bank. It's up to us as researchers to continue this collaboration. And if you're interested in reading the full report, this report was published in Crop Science in the July-August 2010 issue. And again, I want to thank my co-authors for the diligent efforts in making this project come to a realization. Thank you. Okay. She asked if efforts were underway to create uniform descriptor data. Actually, it is not underway as a result of this collaboration, although I'd like to say it is. But I think that was already ongoing and initiated by USDA. There's some interaction with the Chinese in this regard, and also the French and CIRAD. We're not there yet, but I think it is beginning.
Do these flowers represent the different varieties of cotton around the world?
These flowers on the screen here are probably only a snapshot of the beautiful flower diversity present in Gossypium. So I'm not sure exactly how many species are represented here, but about five. And I'll note that this is Gossypium hirsutum, the cultivated flower. Of course, we don't try and improve flower color. We're trying to improve this stuff down here.